Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This story was told at Frontier in Brunswick, where the event's dedicated theme was seen and unseen. Here's today's host, one of Soundbite's very own producers who lives here in Portland, Donna Galuzzo.
So we're gonna bring up our first teller with resounding applause for Gina Alibrio.
So, I'm sitting in Linda's Pub. It's a bar in Seattle, Washington. And I just moved there a week ago, and I'm sitting there with my little moleskin notebook about the different places I have to go see in Seattle, Washington. And this is the last place that Kurt Cobain was seen alive. And I'm just feeling so rock and roll right now. And I'm sitting at this bar. I casually mentioned to the bartender that I'm here on a small recording contract with an independent recording company, you know, just off the cuff, you know. And I decide that I really want to order one of those really strong local IPAs, you know, just to get acclimated. And so he gives it to me. We have no exchange. And I take a big sip and I start choking uncontrollably. To the point where he has to ask me if I'm all right, he brings over some water, people at the bar are concerned, it's a whole scene. And I feel like I should have thought that was a sign. But instead, my little 28-year-old heart was like, all right, I got a lot to learn about this city, and I'm gonna be an indie rock goddess in this city. Sub Pop is gonna fall on their knees in front of me and beg me to be on their label. So I should go out and check it out. And I dedicated every night to going out into that scene, to try to be seen, and try to see other people in, you know, what we love to do, which is music. And so, you know, I would just catch wind of this show here, or this underground show here, or, you know, this gallery opening here, and I would go out every night, just hoping to make a connection. And I began to realize that Seattle wasn't really the rock and roll town that it once was in the 90s. This little band called The Head and the Heart had just come out, and they were blowing up. And all of a sudden, everybody was wearing, like, really baggy clothing and like, really large glasses. And everybody had kind of, like, a vocal affectation, like. And everybody had a mandolin in their band. And people were, you know, asking me where my, you know, if I played the saw. It was, like, very bizarre. And I thought to myself, I don't know if these are my people, but I'm gonna damn well try. And I went to every open mic, and I did my thing, which is kind of like singer-songwriter, soul, R&B kind of thing. And I would get the same thing every time. People would say to me, oh, your voice is incredible, but, like, what are you gonna do with it? Like, your music's, like, really predictable. I was like, okay. But I kept trying. I kept going out. And people had warned me about this Seattle freeze, this thing where, like, you know, people kind of pretend to feign interest in what you're saying, and you have this exchange, and you kind of get just close enough, but not close enough to really become friends. Like, I'm from New Hampshire. I'm from the Northeast. You have a best friend? That's your best friend. There's a bus going by, and they're walking in front of it. You're going to push them out of the way and take one for the team. Like, that's your friendship in the Northeast. I would make dinner plans with people to follow up on them to get voicemail after voicemail, and I just wasn't making any connections. It's like I felt like nothing was really happening for me. And then to add insult to injury, I lost my record contract. I spent the better part of a year working on 3/4 of an album, only to have it shelved to the tune of $8,000 to try to uncover it, if I wanted to hear what I had done. And I thought, oh man, I have no friends. I'm in this random place that I thought was something that it's not. And I'm really lonely. And on top of that, I'm broke. So the option of going home isn't really an option right now. You know, the thought of living with my parents until like I could like regain some semblance of a savings account was like worse than staying there. So I thought, okay, I should probably find a job. I mean, and I had a side job, which oddly enough was at this little food truck called Happy Grillmore. It was a burger truck, and their big best-selling sandwich was called the Chubbs. It was like a double patty. But that wasn't really making me much money, so I hit the pavement once again to go out and try and try and try to get myself some kind of employment that was substantial. So I would go to these interviews, and people would ask me where I was from, and I would say, Boston. And then all of a sudden, it felt like there was a wall between me and this interviewer. It was like they didn't want any transplants to be working at their locally owned business. It was really weird. So I started to omit it. I started to like not say where I was from, not be as personal, just kind of answer everybody's questions, and they would see right through me. I was completely transparent. They would be like, you're not from here, are you? Where are you from? And then I'd say Boston, and then I knew I wouldn't get the job. Until one day, I answered this advertisement for a bartender's position at this little bar called the Old Peculiar Pub. I mean, the name says it all, right? And there I was, dressed up for an interview. I had a dress on, had heels on. I was ready to nail this. I was like, this is the one, I can feel it. Because I got a really positive response in the email. It was like a little bit more meaty than some of the meet me here at 5 or whatever. So I get there, and it's this decrepit old green building with the old Dublin, ye old Dublin font of signs above it. And peculiar was spelled P-E-Q-I-L-I-A-R. That's definitely not how you spell that, but apparently that's how they did. So I get there, and behind the bar, which was a giant horseshoe, in front of concrete floors, some old, like, shredded green carpet to the side, was a man waiting for me to come in with my resume. And it reeked of, like, stale old cigarettes. Do you know that old dive bar smell where it's like, there's kind of like a hint of vomit somewhere, and then like, you know, pee and old beer stuck to the floor. And I walk in and I sit down, and I had this great conversation with Carl, my boss, essentially, who at the end of the interview said, I really like you, Gina. I like your attitude. I think you're pretty real. I think you can handle this place. And he reaches across the bar and just slides me a key. Just like that. And I mean, trying to hide my elation, I was like, oh, I finally got a job. I can save this money. I can get home. I was also kind of perplexed. I'm like, this guy trusts me with a key to his place. I've known him for 10 minutes. And then he proceeds to show me how to open the bar, because I had to start working in my dress and heels. So first, he gives me the litany, or the ritual, rather, of every single fluorescent light in the pub that I need to turn on, and in what order. There was about 25. You know, the Bud Lights here, the Jaeger machines here, stand on the chair to get the Michelob Ultra sign. You know, you have to open the pool table just right. You got to give it two punches and then it's open. There was like a lot of idiosyncrasies about like how to make this little place, you know, what it was. He also showed me the bar log. He's like, this is the bar log. In here is everything that's happened throughout the past couple of months. You know, everybody writes a little something in the bar log at the end of the night. Just make sure you keep me updated on everything that's happening in here. And I'm looking at this thing and it's like, Bill got in a fight with Bradley again and I had to take Dave's keys and this, that, and the other thing. Saw a puppy behind the bar last night, tried to hit it with the bat, couldn't get to it. Puppy? What's a puppy, Carl? Oh, that's our code word for rat. And then he looked at me and he said, you gotta be careful. These people, they can eat you alive. I cleaned house here just recently, and I think you're just what I need to kind of hold this place together. I'm counting on you. And I thought, you know what? It can't get any worse. What the hell? Let's go. Bring it on, old peculiar. Let's see what you got. And it wasn't easy. These regulars gave me a run for my money, sent back drinks. You know, I'm not Dan, I'm Dave, but they really were Dan and Dave. They've switched their names. You know, the whole litany of things, you know, that you would do to like a fraternity brother was done to me. But I stuck it out. And I got to learn the names and the drinks of this really ridiculous cast of characters. You know, you'd have Ron, who couldn't get through one session at the bar without playing Cherry Bomb like 8 times on the jukebox. Or Dave, who could control the jukebox from his phone outside the bar, who would enter the bar to the Rocky theme every time he came in the bar. You had someone like Larry, who was going through chemotherapy across the street and would come to the bar and bring his whole family and just sit with a Guinness. He'd never drink it, but he would sit with it. And he would talk to his family and friends. You had someone like Danielle, who I think her only moment of peace was to come in and have a big tall beer and put about $10 in the MegaTouch machine before she had to go pick up all 3 of her kids from various practices. And these people were different. They started to ask me, did I have any siblings? Where was I from? How was my day? And I thought to myself, oh my God, I found my people. I found them. And I'm the ringleader of this really bleeped up circus that is like happening in these little 4 walls of this nasty old bar. And, you know, it just became clear that you can't go into any sort of new embarkment of your life with expectations, because you never know really what you're gonna learn from that experience, or what you thought you were gonna learn turns out to be not what you got out of it at all. And these people, they took me out to dinner. They remembered my birthday. They remembered what kind of food I'd like and would bring it to me. And I mean, and it was kind of an ugly scene. But the Seattle freeze did not exist within the 4 walls of the old peculiar. And now, every year, on my birthday, those regulars still call and text me to see how I am. And although the scene of Portland, of Seattle, Washington, didn't accept me for who I was, or didn't want to hear who I was, these folks really saw me for who I was. Thank you.
So a little bit more about Gina. As she told us, she's a New Hampshire native, and she's a musical theater graduate of Emerson College. She's been performing regularly in the New England music scene for over a decade. And by the way, she's amazing. She spent 2 years in Seattle, Washington, as we also know. She's taught vocal instruction at the Midcoast School of Music for 3 years, and she currently fronts the Portland funk supergroup, the Red Eye Flight Crew, featuring members of the bands Model Airplane, Sister Sparrow, The Dirty Birds, Rustic Overtones, and Jaw Gems. Thank you so much. That was fantastic.
If you want to know more about today's storyteller, you're in luck. Let's join our host backstage now in conversation with today's teller.
What's your connection to Maine?
I moved here 3 years ago for a job, but my family has been vacationing in Acadia National Park since I was a baby. So, yeah, every year and camping, for sure.
And what got you into storytelling?
I was a musical theater major. Having a theater background, it was kind of like a logical step in that direction. I've taken a long break from it, so it's going to be interesting to see how it goes tonight.
I'm so glad you're going to re-enter with us. And what's your process for preparing to tell your story?
Especially for this particular one, I went back and I talked to a lot of the people that I had been surrounded with at the time of it, as well as listening to a lot of the music I was listening to at the time, actually, and it kind of put me right back there, for sure.
Awesome. Now, last, can you tell us about part of your story, a kind of a behind-the-scenes detail that didn't make it in tonight?
There was a period of time during the course of my story where I was actually living out of my car, but in order to go into that detail, it would have been a lot longer of a story.
I get it. Thank you.
Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to Toad & Co. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, is online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainepublic.org.